if there's like a percentage of like how much, you know, of all the characters in the industry, what percentage is like, you know, Latinx or Puerto Rican, I'd say it's like really, really, really small, like under 10%, maybe even less. And then like, if you were at the top of your head, if you were like, if you were to go to somebody, name a popular character in comics, in superhero comics, that is Latinx, I mean, I can't name anyone. I can name the characters, but I will tell you, like, that's not a really popular character. Just because, like, me, you and a bunch of nerds like it, doesn't mean it's, like, a popular character. It's not known outside of the nerd community.
I like the idea of any Puerto Rican who wants to throw their hat in the ring of comics and put out comic books. I'll read it. Even if I don't like it, I'll still be like, you should check this out. I just won't say whether I like it or not. Just because I think the more you have people that are Puerto Rican doing it, the more you have people who either they're young or teenagers or adults, if they have artistic or writing talent or ability they've been honing, they may think to themselves, you know, comic books is a possible avenue for me. And it goes back to that whole, a lot of what people say is, you know, if you see positive influences of people out there in comic book characters, or you see creators of that, you know, ethnic group out there creating, it gives other people hope, and it gives other people think that you can go, I can do this.
Things you notice if you don't already see it with this book is that it proves there is a lot of talent out there, that a lot of Latinx talent, a lot of minority talent, that is, you know, good. And that should be doing more in the industry, and that their work should be out there, and they should be getting more notice, and that there really isn't an excuse as to why, like honestly, if you're a publisher, and I don't know, I'll probably kill my chances with any publisher now that I'm about to say this. If you're a publisher, and, you know, you have the opportunity to bring on, you know, Latinx talent, I mean, well, we just did a book that, yeah, it was, you know, for charity, but then it's been used for so much more, and it shows writing and artistic talent of people. So, like, you really have no excuse, because there's a book you can literally just get off the shelf and flip through it and just be like, you know, go to your assistant and be like, find me that person, you know, or like go online and find them, and then just like, you know, be like, hey, and then, you know, work with them. So, I mean, it's one of the easiest things. I mean, honestly, at this point, you know, we've proven that any excuse that any editors, creators, publishers have from here on out on why they don't have more minority talent, well, it's basically a bullshit excuse.
Last episode, we talked about Reconstruction a bit, but this time, we're going to spend a little time on the other anthology we used as our interview Rolodex, Puerto Rico Strong.
Right off the bat, shout out to Puerto Rico Strong, published under the Lion Forge banner, for winning an Eisner for Best Anthology at 2019 San Diego Comic-Con. That's big time, y'all. Like, the Eisner Awards are the Oscars in the comic book world in terms of renown.
Both anthologies were winners that night. What's really big here, though, is not the awards these anthologies won, but the impacts they had and the social good these works were able to do for the island of Puerto Rico and Boricuan creators.
True, and that right there is what we're talking about today, how art can make a difference.
This season has been an amazing ride for us, and if you walk away with just a fraction of the things we've learned about Puerto Rico while doing this work, then we hope you take what you've learned and support however you can, and in that way, our art can make a difference.
But without further ado, we'd like to bring you the final core episode of Rico and Sueños.
Power.
You.
That's my homie Wilson.
And he's Lou.
And you are now tuned in to the Power of You in Fiction.
Rico and Sueños, episode 6. Art is active. Art is powerful.
Okay, so confession. We didn't actually get to talk to Marco Lopez.
We did not. Full transparency, and this is wild for me because I'm the schedules guy, right? But we had an interview set up with Marco 3 times. But you know, life happens, and sometimes the connection just doesn't work out.
But we did some digging and got some sound bites from an interview with Double Page Spread and an interview he did with Desi with our other homies over at Black Comics Chat.
This entire anthology is the brainchild of Marco, and he knew once he heard the hurricane was coming, that it was going to be a big one, and it's going to hit hard to that he wanted to do something to help.
He said all that he knew was how to make comics. But you know what? That was enough.
So back when this all began, it was because, you know, I'm here in Florida, staying with my parents, and I'm, like, at their house, and I'm just like, oh, great, a second hurricane is coming to Puerto Rico. And I, myself, have been through, I went through Hurricane Andrew as a kid. I went through another major hurricane in Puerto Rico when I was in high school. And then I've been through a bunch of smaller hurricanes. So I've been through, like, maybe, like, 5 or 6 hurricanes in my life and survived and dealt with all of it. So when that was happening last year, I was like, this is really bad. And the only thing that I thought of was, like, man, I need to do something about this. And, you know, there's something I can do. And I was like, well, what can I do? And I was like, well, I know comics and I know writing. And I was like, and I know people who work in comics. So, you know, when I reached out to Derek and Desiree, and then Derek brought in Neil, and then Hazel came in when I brought the project to Lionforge, and to see it from then go to where it is now, and to see all the stories that we're covering and the depth of stories and the type of stories, it's just been amazing and a wild ride in a short amount of time and just very crazy.
It's a shame we couldn't get that mic time in order to dig into that some more.
Indeed. But do not fret, dear listeners, because we did get one of the 3 Puerto Rican editors on the project, Desiree Rodriguez.
Shout out to Derek Uriz, who is the 3rd Boricua editor. And of course, shout out to the rest of the editorial team and all the contributors.
Yeah, man, this was a whole team lift project. But Desi, so some listeners might remember my brief geek out about doing our language wars episode. Well, this time I get to go full on throttle because Desi Rodriguez is a true blue badass. She's out here doing amazing, amazing things as Lionforge's Catalyst Prime Universe editor, which is a dope superhero line. We're also generational peers. We share a mentor, the big homie Joe Illich. Shout out to him. And her anime fandom is top notch, y'all. And she's a freaking genius with spreadsheets. Like, yo, she speaks directly to my editorial soul.
Yeah, and Desi is overall hilarious. She is fun to talk to. She has a great sense of humor. She is also from New Jersey, even though she doesn't like it as much as I did. And she, like all the editors, brought some of herself and some of her values into this project. And the one big thing she brings is her educational value.
I think it's so fascinating. I love history in general. Like, I think we can learn so much from history. And it all goes back to education. I'm just a big, big proponent on education. And that was one of the goals when Marco Lopez came to me with Puerto Rico Strong. I was like, we could make an anthology. We could make a charity anthology. And people will support it because it's charity, you know, and that's great. It's definitely what we want. But I'm like, we also have an opportunity to create something that has longevity. And when everything with Hurricane Maria had gone down, so many people were like, well, you know, why can't they take foreign aid? Why can't they do this? And I was like, you know, people just don't know. They didn't know things like about like the Jones Act. You know, they didn't know that Puerto Rico was like a U.S. territory, you know, and that the island's rights are very limited. Ignorance, I always felt like, could be addressed through education, can be addressed if you have the willingness to learn. You know, you have to have empathy to learn, and you have to have a willingness to actually learn and such. And our education system is so broken, and history is so whitewashed that, like, I don't remember anything, learning anything in history. I mean, I don't really remember learning anything. It was New Jersey, and then Delaware after, which was worse somehow. You know, I was like, we have an opportunity here to create a book that teaches people too, as well as tells great stories by a lot of Latinx creators. Being able to have something that was like just so unashamedly like, this is our history, these are the good bits, these are the bad bits, and these are, you know, the beautiful bits, and, you know, all the in between. So yeah, it's been really cool. So that was one of the goals, was to be able to get this into schools. And that's one of the things that we still get today. We get a lot of teachers reaching out to Lionforge and stuff. We get a lot of teachers and educators that come up to like the booth and stuff, asking about Puerto Rico Strong, talking about what a great resource it is. And I'm like, yes, goal accomplished. Like, that's what we wanted. That's one of the goals that we wanted to accomplish, was to be able to create a piece of fictional media that could double as an educational tool. So that way, you know, you're not just supporting the island, you're learning something about it in the process.
Yo, her belief in curing ignorance through education is one of my favorite things about Desi. And Puerto Rico Strong pulls this off spectacularly, y'all.
Yeah, it sort of gives snapshots of Puerto Rican history and culture and the diaspora in this very cohesive way, even though they had more than like 60 creators contribute to this book.
And they put this together in only 5 months, like an award-winning anthology from pitch to print in only 5 months. Can you imagine? Wow.
Desi and Marco together spin this great narrative on how this whirlwind schedule came to be.
It was just one of those, we really wanted to make it happen. We really wanted, because it was one of the things I always keep telling everybody, it was an incredibly short schedule. As far as I know, even when it comes to comics, I think the only time that probably had a shorter schedule is when Marvel did, way back when they did the whole 9/11 reaction comics. I think that might have had a shorter schedule. But it was incredibly short, and it was a lot of emails. It was just a very wild ride. I think it would have to be more, it probably would have to have been more wild for Hazel, Desiree, Derek, and Neil. Because Neil, you know, working at Nickelodeon and then doing this. And then Derek working at his job and then doing this. And then Desiree and Hazel working at Lion Forge. And I'm doing all the stuff that they have to do at Lion Forge. And on top of doing that, me, I wasn't really working a day job while doing that. So I was more like, yeah, just, you know, you need me, you know, just throw more stuff on me. Because, like, I don't have, you know, anything else that I'm, you know, doing around this.
What? We pitched this anthology New York Comic Con, which was October, and gathered up the majority of the contributors. And then we had to get everybody contracted. And contracting was a whole separate thing. You have to make up a lot of work orders. We had a lot of contributors. I want to say at least 40, maybe. I might be underselling that, actually. We might actually have more. We probably have more.
That made sense. It's 60 plus, if I remember correct, for the amount of creators we had in the book.
Wow.
It was a lot of people. And yeah, I can't count. This is why I'm in editorial and publishing, not math. This is why I taught literacy to young girls, not mathematics. People didn't actually get started until probably November, and the book had to go out February. So it was about a 2-3 month project. And you can usually, a single issue takes 3 to 4 months. So an anthology, which is, our anthology was about 240 something pages. It was very tight for a lot of people. I felt for all the writers and all the artists and the colorists and the letters that worked on it and really put their hearts into it to be able to put something in that was of value.
They had a team that was inspired, motivated, and determined. They worked together to fill each other's gaps because they truly believed in what the anthology could achieve.
And now, in 2020, after people have had a chance to sit with the anthology, we can get a pulse on how it resonated.
The reaction we've gotten has been really positive, which was great. There was a girl working at a comic booth at San Diego when I went to San Diego. And it was the day after, you know, like the Eisners and stuff. And I was talking with her and she thanked me, you know, for Puerto Rico Strong. And she was like, this is one of the first times that I've seen us, like, you know, that I've seen such a strong piece of our culture and stuff. And she was just like so thankful and grateful and stuff. And it was such a touching moment. And I was like, look, I'm gonna cry. And this mascara is not waterproof. It's like, give me a moment. That's been amazing. Like to have people say that, like, you know, this piece of media, like they feel seen in it. It's such a great feeling to know, to have been able to be a part of that, you know, and to have so many talented people want to be a part of that and to help bring that to life has been incredible. And Mamita's always on me, but she's like she's one of my biggest supporters. She took a copy. I gave her a copy of Puerto Rico Strong and she called me and later and she was like, this book made me cry. And I was like, mission accomplished. And I was like, I didn't mean for it to sound that way. Don't take offense. I'm just really happy that you felt touched that way. And she did. She was like, this, you know, she was like reading this. She's like, I got as far as like the food comic. And she doesn't read comics. She doesn't know what a Superman is. She knows what a Wonder Woman is. That's basically it.
Just warms my heart.
For real. For real, for real. But there's another thing we got to highlight.
What?
We'll get to that right after this break. Come on now, y'all. Yeah, I had to see this one coming. right, so Lou.
Yep.
As the listeners probably know, we did not get Edgardo on Mike to talk about all his great things, but we still wanted to shout him out. And here we go shouting him out again, because he has an amazing program that he's curating. So it's called The Color of Power, Heroes, Heroes, and Their Creators. And it's going to be, well, it's actually being held at the Caribbean Cultural Center for African Diaspora Institute, which is in Harlem. And I just wanted you to know, give the listeners a little 1-2 on what you thought about the program once you saw that write-up.
I think it's pretty cool, especially since it's the artivism. Artivism, that's a new phrase. I totally meant to do that. Art and activism episode.
Stamp you it. See,
artivism, hashtag artivism, go use it. This is another thing that Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez is doing for the Caribbean Cultural Center. And it's another thing that is putting creators of color in spotlight. This exhibit is there through June 13th of this year, and it's got work from Sanford Green, who is doing the Blackity Black comic Bitterroot right now. If you thought the Tulsa Massacre thing was interesting in Watchmen, check that out. The homie Ron Wimberly, who we've had on the What's Up Wednesday. Yeah. Richardson, who is my mom's favorite comic artist, who she totally has a woman crush on. Niall Magruder, who wrote one of my favorite Black children's stories, How to Find a Fox, and a couple of more people. It's a really dope event. It's going to be there through June. And yeah, Edgardo, stay putting people on the Reconstruction Anthology, and now with this exhibit.
For sure. And a real cool thing with this exhibit is he's talking to people who have roots from all across the Caribbean. You know what I'm saying? Jamaica, pick up Jamaica, the Bahamas, Antigua, Puerto Rico, of course, and then, you know, everyone else who's a part of that Caribbean diaspora. So as Lou said, check that joint out. If you are in the Harlem area, go visit, try to catch it. We'll drop more in the episode description, and we'll also tweet about it. So do that. Before the break, we talked about the effect Puerto Rico Strong had on readers, and now I want to focus on the contributor side and how they brought themselves into such a fruitful piece.
True. We had them on all season. Only some got to talk about their submissions. So we have to let someone get a word in.
Exactly.
I think I got a perfect candidate for you, though.
Ooh. What you thinking, bro?
Bringing the series full circle back to episode one, I'm going to hit you with Ronnie and their submission here.
That's a good one. It's the first story in the whole anthology, and it just sets the tone for what we're in for as readers.
I was brought on. It wasn't something where it's like, all right, you know, this person's going to be first, this person's going to be second, and so on and so forth. I just was told, like, you have X amount of pages to be able to tell your story. And I was like, okay, I think I could do mine in six. And... you know, I just wanted to do something kind of simple and straightforward in my means, because I didn't know so much about, like, let's say the history or like current events that were going on. And I didn't feel entirely confident in my personal experience with being Puerto Rican. But because of the hurricane, we did have a lot of experience of the feeling of hopelessness from being kind of like on the sidelines and just trying to figure out like, well, what can we do? And it was like really validating that a lot of what I heard of was people saying like, yeah, you really kind of like encompassed a lot of the feelings and nuance of kind of like what's going on across the board, whether you're on the island or from the diaspora, of, you know, a little bit about the history, you know, a little bit of how the island was already kind of set for disaster. And then now disaster hit and a lot's been lost, but how are we going to keep moving forward? And the answer to that is together. Like, there wasn't much that we could do on the, you know, because I couldn't be on the island. I couldn't physically help out and, like, let's say help clean up damage or hand out resources, but I could help my mom assemble donation drives. And so we went to like a few donation drives across town. We were thinking of like, okay, let's get solar panels, let's get different batteries, let's get lamps, let's think of whatever it is that they might need that they won't have access to. And the comic itself was that extra special little thing that I felt specifically I could do, in the sense like, I'm not, you know, a construction worker, I'm not someone with a lot of money, I can't just pour money into recovery efforts for Puerto Rico, but if I can just share even just like a little bit of this skill that I have to help get this message out, then that's enough for me. And so when I got the book and my professor actually, my comics professor actually got it before I did because he works at a comic shop. He's like, look what just came in. He's like, you're the first one. I was like, wait, what? So yeah, I like actually cried a little bit. I was like, oh, that's so sweet. And a lot of people said that it was, like a nice kind of transition into opening up to all of the other topics that everyone else would have been covering more in depth through the rest of the anthology. And it's such a special project to be a part of. Like, I absolutely loved everyone's work in it. And the fact that a lot of people, you know, like Rosa Colon, she talked a lot about, like either the reproductive rights, like the history of that in Puerto Rico and the debt crisis and people talking about the Taino history and, even the people who talked about their hope for the future of Puerto Rico and going into like the futuristic aspect of that was so cool. And so for that to be my first, half published anthology project, it was, it's still going to be like one of those things that I'm just going to be so honored to have been a part of, like for the rest of my life. Like if I do nothing else, I'm at least proud to have been a part of that.
You're right about that piece embodying the anthology on the surface and behind the scenes. Ronnie drew from their personal Puerto Rican experience in the States and wanted to create something that felt universal. It validates the experience of many readers aiming to help. It's educational and it's well put together in a 6-page comic.
Whew, even more. This is Ronnie's first piece of published work and they just knocked that joint out of the park, y'all.
What's more than that? Is that Ronnie is actually an art activist and their dream is to give more Latinx creators a space where they can create.
When I was in college, I was in like this very small program for digital arts and my high school friend, Caleb Ortega, he was in the graphic design program and that was another small one. So, you know, our programs were held in this very small, tiny building called Alexis Lab and him and another classmate has started this little arts collective to kind of like showcase graphic design and digital arts students' work. And then when she transferred to a different school, he asked me to come aboard and like help him out. And so for the rest of my college career, we were kind of like expanding this Alexis collective from hosting these little themed showcases, that kind of allowed students to probably show their work for the first time in a gallery setting in the sense where their work normally wouldn't have been showcased because it wasn't fine art. It wasn't like traditional studio art. But we had, you know, plain white walls and we had gallery lighting that was primarily used for us to be able to critique our work as a class. We're like, let's bring everyone else in to be able to look at this work. And just the confidence that that gave people, because they're like, wow, you know, everyone's actually seeing my work in a way that it's normally not seen because for digital art students and graphic design students, it's usually seen on the screen. And so for them to see it blown up on, you know, these big 24x36 size prints and, you know, we would bring in drinks and snacks and we would have music playing and people would come in from the campus and we had some people who would come in from the town itself in Santa Fe and because it was an open campus and people would be like, wow, so this is what you students do. This is what you can really do. And I loved the showcasing and curating experience. And later on in like my junior and senior year, I brought in other students and we start also hosting like workshops. So a friend of mine, Rufino, he would have workshops on tutorials for like 3D programs like Maya. He would have InDesign tutorials. I hosted introductory like storyboarding workshop. And it was just like those little moments of being able to share what we've learned with other students. As students, it was really empowering. It kind of, you know, made us feel confident like, yeah, you know, we are becoming professionals. We know what we're talking about. We have confidence in what we've learned. And I just love that experience of working with other people like one-on-one and in person and seeing the effects of them either trying something new that they've never had the chance to try before, or them getting to see their work in a new light and have people that they've never met and have no connection to be like, I love this. I love what you do. I love where you're going, and I can't wait to see what else you do. And so I would love to be able to do that again sometime in the future, whether it's through my own foundation or helping out at, you know, another pre-existing foundation. I just really want to like start curating like art showcases again. Because like with the anthology, like with what the editors did, it's so fun to pull all these completely different works and finding a way to present them in a way that's a cohesive whole. So it's like little things like that, because I didn't get that experience as a kid. The only chance like I got was, I think, in high school when we had like our senior portfolio showcase. And then of course in college, because of our friends being like, yeah, we're going to make our own gallery space. We're going to make our own showcases. You know, no, we're not going to wait for someone else's permission to do so. We're just going to do it.
Ooh, I remember when you saw they tweeted that, and I'm glad you got to ask them about it. Yo, shout out to you, Ronnie, and I hope you achieve your dream. Next person I want to highlight, though.
Hey. You want to highlight? I've been scheming this since last episode.
That don't mean like...
Remember the Kenan and Kel thing? The table saw?
Well, bro, my interview, my highlight.
Fine, go.
Shaking my head. Just all up in my sauce. Anywho, I want to introduce one of my favorite interviewees of the season and one of Ronnie's favorite persons, the remarkable Rosa Colon.
So my name is Rosa Colon Guerra, and I make comics and illustrations. And what I like to do for fun is sit down and talk with friends. And if I'm drawing and they're drawing, it's a plus, but we don't have to do anything. Just sit down with a cup of coffee. And if you want to talk TV, we can talk TV. If you want to talk politics, we can talk politics. And that's actually, I found that's my nice downtime. Like, just sit down and chat about anything and learn a little bit about each other and trade Instagram favorite artists and stuff like that, and just have a nice quiet time. I think that's what I like to do.
Right. Glad we got to get Rosa in. We've been trying to find a way to have her on all season. She's an amazing comic creator and activist, but she educates true stories that don't exactly fall into the realm of fiction.
But since this is the art and activism episode, we're going to bend the rules some and give Rosa the floor, starting with her PR strong submission of Broken Promesa.
I think it started by paying attention to the local politics. I always found it a bit overwhelming and I didn't participate much, but after President Obama signed the Promesa law, and all of a sudden it was like, wait, I have to pay attention to this, what's going on? And a lot of our friends were already moving away from the island before the hurricane because they couldn't find jobs, the jobs don't pay well, or everything's way too expensive. So my friend Carla and I, we decided to write a comic around the conversations that we were having at that moment, like, should we be moving? Like, where do you want to move? And stuff like that. And it's fiction, but we use the core conversations as a basis. So we injected a lot of politics into that fiction story. And I really liked it a lot. And I wanted to write, like I said, I wanted to educate myself more.
Ayo, this piece is active, resistive, political, and it does not shy away from the negligent and harmful treatment Puerto Rico has experienced because of U.S. legislature.
It learns so much, couple-page comics. The framing narrative is a little fictional, but all the historical facts are spot on with things that really happened, and talk about something so complicated that was part of Obama's legacy, which is weird for me to sort of wrestle with, OBZ being my favorite president.
Yeah, yo, you can learn so much from her work. And it gives you those, you know, real conflicting feelings that you have to grapple with. Like, A Broken Promesa is a great example of what she does. She also creates comics for the NIP with the same purpose of educating people on the history of her home.
We were very fortunate to go to Cake Chicago right before the hurricane, actually. And I noticed a few artists there talked about the NIP and about pitching to the NIP. And I said, well, you know, nobody's talking about Puerto Rico. Maybe I should step up up and try something. And that was like my first step towards the nonfiction comics. But then the hurricane, like the two hurricanes hit and I was in conversations with them. And so that kind of like the hurricane propelled that kind of story for a lot of us here, I think. But for me specifically, like, okay, well, I want to talk about what's happening here, especially because I was also seeing like, it was cool to see the diaspora speak up because we didn't have any communications. But at the same time, I also saw like a lot of people who weren't necessarily linked to the communities or the culture speaking up too, like, and saying really simple explanations for really complicated problems. And I said, well, okay, it's kind of important for people, for people on the island and for the diaspora people to speak up because, you can't have like these reporters not know anything about anything and talk. I've taught a few classes. I've taught classes and stuff, and I don't necessarily like the bureaucracy and the educational system, but I really like finding a way to explain a problem to another person and seeing them get it. And I think that helped me a lot with the comics, and I've received a lot of feedback that says, well, you know, I really like the way you explained it because it was overwhelming before, but you broke it down in such a way that I get it now. And I think that that's the best feedback I could possibly get. Plus a lot of support, of course, because I didn't know so many people read the NIB here until I started getting published by the NIB. And then everybody was like, oh my God. And I was like, ah. But but yeah, that's the best feedback. And that's the feedback I'm always hoping to get, like, oh, you made this way easier to understand, or yeah, exactly, that's what I was trying to say, but you've said it in a comic.
That's a really cool comic niche to fall into. Educating the masses through comics and art about complex issues. The learner in me is all for that.
And you want to know what's the best part, bro?
What?
You can read all of Rosa's work on the NIB for the free 99, because the NIB publishes it for all to read. Information for everybody.
Bet. I'm gonna go do that right now, and we can keep going after the commercial break. All right, listeners, in this commercial break, we are about to add to Rosa's long list of artivism with another project she's doing. And on mic to tell you all about that is the homie, the co-pilot, the interviewer, Wilson.
Absolutely. I know that Rosa is one of my favorite persons. She is on my list of badass individuals locked in. What she's working on is called Resilient, Artist Collective Zine for Puerto Rico's Disaster Relief Fund. We all know about hurricanes and earthquakes. So this is another way that Rosa is going out there, boots on the ground, using her art to make a difference with this amazing zine.
Yeah, the zine is for the low, low price of $2, 200 pennies, 8 quarters, not a lot. And you get a lot of artwork from not just Rosa, but other art is who contributed to the zine. And as Wilson said, all the money is going to a good cause on the ground.
Yeah, so it's on Gumroad. We're also going to drop the link to the zine itself in our episode description, and we're going to tweet about it. It is out now, so go cop that and read it. Enjoy it, love it. Tweet Rosa, tweet the other artists. Let them know that you've been supporting the work and that you are supporting Puerto Rico Disaster Relief. So, fam, let me and our listeners know what you read and learned.
Okay, fascinating point that I don't know how many of us realize. Boricuas have been fighting the good fight since the 16th century and working toward revolution.
Dag, you know what? I see a rabbit hole fast approaching, and we still got a lot of ground to cover.
I mean, you asked me if I learned something, which... Ooh,
I know. I, too, am excited by learning, but Rosa is still doing dope things that matter. So we got to bite into all of that first.
Like, what we talking about?
Okay, got you. Well, we're going to dip our pen in the inkwell and talk about a little comics festival Rosa puts on called Tintero.
One thing that you learn here really quick is that you have to make your own opportunities, because if not, you just don't. You can stay at home and complain that nobody's inviting you to art expos, or you can make your own art expo. That's it. So I started with my friend Carla, we started trying to get to know the art community, like, actively. So it would be like, I would finish working on a Thursday to go to an art expo and meet the artists and talk a little bit and then go back home and go to sleep. And that led us to get to know a lot of the muralists and illustrators and graphic designers that are here that are also trying to make their own way and carve a little space. And that led to making more comics, more ambitious comics. Like, I've done a few anthologies here and scene and collective scenes. And that means getting everybody on track and getting everybody to give you their art. And it was a lot of work. And on top of that, because you say, well, what's a lot of work? So we decided to make our own comic book convention. So we said, like, well, there's no art festival focusing on independent publishing that's illustrator-based or comic-based, so let's do that. And for 5 years, Carla and I organized Tintero to help promote local artists and stuff like that, and that took a whole bunch. So the vision was, like, there used to be a lot of local comic festivals or comic conventions, and we have a huge one, the Puerto Rico Comic Con. Local artists that have small press, they always get lost. You can't have, like, a table full of Massinger theme toys and then somebody beside it with three comics because they've only published three comics. And we kept thinking that that was a bit daunting for newer artists that only have one comic or two comics to say, like, well, I have to pay this huge table and then compete with all of these toys. And we had been to TCAF in Canada and in Toronto and MICE in Massachusetts, which is a really good one too. And they're small, they're niche, but people show up because they know exactly what they're gonna get. And we wanted something like that here. So we said, okay, well then let's do it. And we went about it, like, how do we want to brand this? Because we wanted the festival to feel as Puerto Rican, whatever that means, as possible. And we wanted it to be completely artist-centric, and we wanted it to be very cheap to participate and cheap to go. So we were very fortunate to find this little house in Rio Piedras that's called Casa Ruth. That's a community space. And it's like a regular house. It used to have, like, right, furniture and everything, but it's a space. If you want to practice your dancing, you just go and book the floor. And so we said, okay, this looks really nice because they had recently had a murals festival in Rio Piedras, and they had painted the house, like, bright pink with bright blue iron works. And we said, this looks so pretty. And people responded immediately to the space, and it was very accessible with public transportation. And we set about to curate the festival because we wanted the best of the best. We wanted to nurture the scene, so we ended up giving scholarships and we gave out prizes so that people felt like a lot of positive reinforcement for their work because we wanted to see more of it. And that was kind of our mission. We wanted to nurture and shine a light on the comics community. And I didn't study advertising or marketing or whatever, but it's just common sense. So we said, like, what do people want to see that's not done by other activities? Well, let's pay a local artist to do the poster, the art. We'll base everything off of that. And it gave it gave Quintero, like, a really nice image, like a presentation. And all of the promo was artist-based, so people came into the space knowing exactly who was there and what was the art that they were making, so they could hit their favorite tables first, get the art, and then walk around the space. And then the local Rio Piedras business owners really liked it too, because Rio Piedras is dead usually in the weekends, and this brought it to life. I don't know if I can do a little parenthesis here, because Rio Piedras used to be... it's a college town. It's where the University of Puerto Rico is. So you would think it would be buzzing, but yeah, but it isn't. It's been slowly dying. It used to be like they say here, like a commerce vein, But shopping changes and people change and it's not the same commerce. And it didn't grab on to the next thing. And most of the buildings are abandoned and they're empty. But it's still a really nice place to walk around because it's a university town. And so we were seeing a lot of other young people doing activities to revitalize the space. So we wanted to also help them out by doing Tintero there. Other than I went to the university there, I walked that place all over since I was a kid. But we wanted to like say like, well, if everybody's chipping in to help out, we can chip in and help out because it's no big deal. And we found a lot of people who helped us out with the space and getting the permits and stuff like that. So it kind of all worked out and we did it for 5 years.
That is amazing. The definition of mirroring art and activism. She not only brought comic creators together, but she also thought about bringing together creators in a space that enriches the local community.
Yes, you can really tell how intentional the team is with everything and how they are really thinking about all the impacts of what they put together. Action like these are why Rosa is a lock, sure lock, in my badass people's list.
It seems to me like the social impacts of whatever Rosa's doing is at the very core of her being. And it shows.
Yeah, man. And even though she loves Tintero, Hurricane Maria had a super real impact. So if she wants to do it again, it's going to be a much harder push.
Because of the elections, a few things changed and it's become a little bit harder. And yeah. And the space was actually, it was really sad because that space belonged to San Juan. And then after before the hurricane, right after the elections, they started cutting funding for all the cultural spaces in the city. And we said like, oh man, they're gonna close it down. And after the hurricane, it was like the perfect excuse. And they shut it down, but thankfully the community took it over. So it's open now because the actual Rio Piedras community is taking care of the space because the city said like, we're too broke to take care of the space. They were just going to keep it shut. And it's such a beautiful space. And now a lot of other like young business owners are doing a whole bunch of activities, to help, again, to help revitalize the space without necessarily a lot of support from the, San Juan, but they're doing it. And it's like, that's kind of like the flow there. Like it might look abandoned, but it comes to life quite a bit. Even if because people say, well, there's no stores there to shop. It's like, but you don't shop in stores anymore. We have to find another function for those buildings. It can't be stores.
And guess what happened, listeners? Despite all those difficulties, Rosa and her Soda Pop Comics co-founder, Carla Rodriguez, recently went through, Tintero 2020 is still happening.
Oh, happy day. That is right. That is right. So if you're tuning in from PR, you can check out Tintero this April 18th and 19th at Casa Ru in San Juan.
That's right. And if you can make it out there, the festival is still happening and is still for the lovely price of free 99. That means free, y'all.
Just like the PR Strong team, the women of Tintero could not be stopped. They are non-stopped. You know what I'm saying? And continue to put on this dope festival.
The art that resonates with people the longest is the art that speaks to the reality of people in the world. If those people have struggles, which I'm sure they do, then your art is your activism.
That's right, y'all. Stay true to yourself and your artwork, and you can play an active role in some meaningful change. And that's enough.
And that's the takeaway here. Your art is enough. And that was the finale of the main arc of Rico and Sueños. It has been such a wild ride. I've learned so much about Puerto Rican culture and literature by spending time with these amazing creators.
And don't worry, listeners. If you wish there was more, we'll be dropping a little something in the way of bonus content every now and then. while we work on the next big thing.
And if you want to know what you can do to support the island, what we're going to do is drop some links to orgs recommended by our guests and the links for orgs that won the Live Border Kenya grant we mentioned in the last episode.
And if you still have not picked up Reconstruction or Puerto Rico Strong, I'm looking at y'all with the judging monkey thing from Family Guy. These last two episodes, though, for real, will be like our last plea. Please go pick that up, y'all. Like, they both support disaster relief in Puerto Rico.
All right, so before we roll through those credits, I just want to do a nice little reflection on the season. So I'm going to ask you one question, ask you for two highlights, and ask for three takeaways. What order you want to do that?
Okay, let's go 2-1-3.
Bet. Two highlights from the season.
All right, two highlights from the season. One would be discovering Rose's comics via Soda Pop Comics and reading just like every single thing that she dropped on the nib before the interview. Like, bro, things I learned. Like the sugar cane situation, like, oh my gosh. Whew, greatness. All right, so that's one. Two would be listening to your interview with the excellent Esmeralda Santiago. Like, chills. I wasn't there in person, but I lived vicariously through you. And, oh, man, like, I gotta say, I was ecstatic when she replied to the solicit for the interview. And then I was crushed when I couldn't make it. But then I was just relieved and overjoyed when I heard that conversation. Just, mwah, chef's kiss.
But so my one question is, how has learning this season changed the way that you see either the U.S. mainland or Puerto Rico?
Okay, I will say that I have gotten a greater appreciation and closeness to my Caribbean cousins. You know, Puerto Rico being in the Greater Antilles, and then we've got, you know what I'm saying, obviously Jamaica being kind of like that prominent Caribbean country. You know what I'm saying? You say you're from the Caribbean and you don't speak Spanish. Most people go, oh, you're from Jamaica? So kind of being able to interact with the creators and learning about their history, hearing about the Taino people history, all of that, and be like, yo, like,
right.
It's mirrored, you know? My conversation with Navani about feeling like you're just enough of an immigrant to not be American enough, but not enough of an immigrant to, you know, to like fully claim your roots was just like, damn, I feel that. So yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. U.S. mainland legislature is trash. As a black man living and growing up in America, it is not surprising that, you know, U.S. legislature continues to be trash with other people of color, especially Puerto Rico being, you know what I'm saying, an unincorporated territory, just a damn near colony of the U.S. So it's kind of like, the same old, but the resistance continues. So yeah, it's one of those things where you wish you could be surprised. I guess you're surprised that it's unsurprising.
Right. And then finally, three takeaways you'd like people to walk away with for the season.
All right, three takeaways. One, I want to reiterate, your art is enough. If your art supports marginalized communities and highlights a struggle, that is enough. You know, you can be that microphone, that loudspeaker, that platform to broadcast something that is there to initiate change. Two, it's always wonderful when you're able to tell your own stories, and it's just always amazing being able to see your own story being told by kindred spirits in this journey of just kind of growth. So anytime you find a piece of literature or a piece of media content that is able to tell your story, share that with the world. Let them know. You know, let them get a little piece of yourself. And three, support your local comic book shops and your local bookstores. There are so many things that we've learned from our creators, so many books that they found, say like War Against All Puerto Ricans, as a primary one that comes to mind. And, you know, they discovered that. But the other part of it is like, the bookstores that carry those things, the small mom and pop shops, like, they're doing a service to the community. And if you pick that up at a local store and you interact with that person who's, you know, providing that piece of content, you can strike up an amazing conversation about some really cool issues. So yeah, those are my three takeaways.
Bet. Think those are very solid and are also kind of actionable, where like a listener can listen to those and be like, oh, I can go do these things, so I can feel like I picked up something from this season. I'm with them.
Bet. All right, now your turn. 2, 1, 3, or you want to do a different order? Mix it up.
I'll go 1, 2, 3 in order to mix it up, but then also still end with 3, so I end on the takeaway.
All right, bet. So my question to you would be, since you weren't able to share what you learned from consuming all of Rosa's content, what is one thing from Rosa's pieces that is not a broken promessa that you wanted our listeners to know about?
It's so wild because like all Rosa's comics were rabbit holes to me. And so I did so much digging on so much crap. And I think one of the ones that sticks with me the most, being a U.S. mainlander and being a descendant of enslaved Africans in the mainland, is while my perspective on American history has been the mainland, Puerto Ricans have been fighting the good fight for more than a century, and that's American history too. I'm very specifically thinking, if I'm relating it to a Rosa comic, thinking about the Ponce Massacre and the nationalist movement, and how Puerto Rico, like much of the southern world post-World War II, was just looking for the right to govern themselves, and the U.S., with the help of the governor of Puerto Rico, found a way to modernize a colonial system and not get ripped off by the U.N. It's just wild to think about, and I keep tripping over it. And then a lot of Puerto Rico's history in general. Like, I learned so much this season.
Real. All right. So hit us with the two highlights.
Two highlights. I am going to give the listeners something else just to give them another two, but like my interview with Esmeralda is something that will stick with me for the rest of my life. And I'm so glad I have that recorded on audio. In case my memory starts to fade, I'm going to just go back and hit play.
Mm-hmm.
Two other highlights though. I love, love, love the Negrita episode. It is one of those we're all connected in some ways episodes, because I'm not Puerto Rican at all, but going through and hearing about the experience of African descendants who are Boricuas, a lot of that was relatable in so many ways, from, you know, historical lifestyle to the rhythm and movement of drums, which is something that has stayed. So that whole episode was definitely a highlight. And I would say another highlight is the fact that most of the people we talked to for this season were women, and that wasn't even planned, because a lot of time when it comes to activism, women are the ones out there doing the thing, and we talked to so many dope women who are out there doing the thing.
Word. Big time. Yeah, I can hear the bomba you plan on action going when you mentioned Negrita. Like, that episode was so, oh man, so good. And yeah, that activism, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, shout out to it. Both great ones, great highlights right there. Now, takeaways.
Takeaway, one, I'm going to go back because the other way I answered the question, Puerto Rican history is American history. It's crazy how invested I am, not just in Puerto Rico, but all the U.S. territories now. Like yesterday, or that's dating a podcast, around the time of this recording, I heard a random story on NPR about Britain making immigration harder and moving to a point system similar to Australia. And it occurred to me that I've heard way more news stories 2020 and 2019 about Britain, which has no direct hold over American lifestyles, and I've heard about all of the United States territories combined. And that's hella problematic to me. It's erasure, and it's erasure that's been going on for a very long time. And I feel like whether or not their relationship with the United States changes, as of now, they are of the United States, even though we've gone out of our way as a society to not make them part of the United States. And we've got to acknowledge that they are of the United States and take a greater investment in the well-being of the people of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands and Guam and the Northern Micronesian Islands and all of the U.S. territories. It's takeaway number one. That's a big one. Please just pay attention. Takeaway number two, I would say that Puerto Rican culture is just very tight-knit and full of life. And it is great to be able to explore a specific culture for a season, and the best way to sort of explore that culture at a very high level is to read this art we're talking about. We explored several facets that we got to go on in some detail, but there's things we hit on in interviews that didn't exactly align with episodes, and it's just rich. Again, Puerto Rico being Caribbean, even if we don't think of it all the way, there is some Caribbean overlap. The music is dope. And when you read these works, try to take away the real about the Puerto Rican culture, because it's a dope culture. And then, yeah, the last takeaway is the takeaway of the show, and I want it to be a takeaway over and over and over, is that there is power in seeing yourself reflected in fiction or creating fiction which you are reflected in. It has very real impacts. We just spent this whole episode talking about some real impacts that came from fiction and came from artists uniting around fiction. So always remember the power.
Swaggy. All right. So we're going to roll credits, y'all. Stick around for the credits, please. Do that. We'll love y'all forever. But yes, this episode's audio dialogue editor and re-recording mixer is Vanessa Flores. Her reliability and skill has made this season a dream for us. Y'all do not understand. So check her out at VanessaFloresAudio.com for any kind of audio project needs that you have.
The homie Deviant Sounds is still in recovery, but he still found a way to come through and knock out the rest of the season for us in covering our musical styling. It's a level of dedication that I can't express how much we appreciate, and we're glad to have him on the team.
Finally, big shout outs to our talented illustrator for this season's cover art, also named Vanessa Flores. Follow her on Twitter at Vani Flores and check her website, VanessaFloresArt.com.
And you can find Rosa Colon on social media at Soda Pop Comics pretty much everywhere. And you can find out more about Tintero at Tintero.pr.
If you want to catch up with the homie Marco Lopez, he's at King Skull Comics on Twitter. He's a little less active than I am these days. Like, that's crazy. But you know, when he posted something, it's popping. So check him out.
His partner in crime, Derek Ruiz, can be found at Derek Ruiz. And he posts a bit more often, so you can keep up with him and possibly also keep up with Marco that way.
Word. Finally, you can find the small but mighty Desiree Rodriguez at Boricua Desiree. Like, her Twitter be on and popping. Anime galore. Go check her out. All right, so obviously we have our own little Twitter account. We be doing things on there. It is at Holyoof Pod. You know what I'm saying? We'll be able to post a bit more since we aren't recording. And I've got my own Twitter account, which is at Words Wilson. You can catch me posting about content that I've consumed and enjoyed. It's a lot of fun. I think I found my little niche of things. So yeah, if you want to hear me fan about, you know, podcasts or books, or maybe a TV show / movie, but predominantly podcasts or books, at Word to Wilson.
You can follow me at Shenz DeGrio. Put the underscore after Shenz and Duh. I have been tweeting a bit more about politics lately, but you know, art and activism. This is the art and activism episode, and I'm doing my part in this democratic process. But we can also actually have those discussions about Rico and Sueños using that hashtag POYIF, S-P-O-Y-I-F, and the hashtag for the season, which is Rich in Dreams. More tweets are coming soon. Transcripts for these episodes are coming soon. I'm not great at all at multitasking, but now that we're done recording, this will be my task.
We have a website over at poyif.com. That is POYIF.com. And don't forget to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend about us. That is exponential growth. And let them know about this season, that you were vibing with it and it's got a lot for them. And Def, consider dropping some coins in our Patreon bucket at patreon.com/poyif. Gets us some money.
And just a thank you to listeners for rocking with us through our first season. I ended up with some pretty out there ideas for this narrative arc, but I also think that we've gotten continually better at sharing stories with y'all that are worth listening. And I feel like this art has come out great. And beyond all of the great PR knowledge and PR creators that you might have consumed, I want to just thank y'all for rocking with us. That's the homies Lou and Wilson, because it's nice to have people that listen when you feel like you've got something to say.
Yes, we truly appreciate y'all. This has been Rico and Sueños, the inaugural season of the Power of You and Fiction podcast.
The nonfiction podcast about fiction and its very real effects on our lives. Peace.
Salud.